All right, so this is Dial 160, and it is November 11th. And let's see, so we're going to finish up cardiovascular, move on to lymphatic system today, and probably not get to immunity, but maybe get to immunity, I'm not sure. And next time, I do want to have a quiz on lymphatic system and immunity. So please look at the student study guide for the immune system and the lymphatic system. It's just one chapter. For next time, and that's it, just that one chapter. So does anybody have any questions? I was passing back your last quiz, and I didn't quite get through the list, but after class I'll finish passing your last quiz back to you. All right, we were talking last time about the conduction system. I just want to make sure that I covered this particular topic. And so you should know each part of the conduction system, what part comes first and second, and how does electrical signal get between from an atrium into a ventricle. And this right here, we see a plot of the electrocardiogram. At least I see it. The electrocardiogram. Right? And you got to know what each of these waves stand for, not just the letter. Right? So you got the P, Q, R, S complex and the T wave, the three main waves. And in terms of electrical events in a nerve or muscle, what happens first? Remember, an electrical event is something we call an action potential. And an action potential has got two parts. What's the first part? Depolarization. What's the second part? Repolarization. So depolarization always comes first. So here we see a P wave. And the P wave, what part of the heart does the P wave come from? The atria, that's right, and this is the first wave, so is it depolarization or repolarization? It's got to be depolarization. And then the QRS complex happens after a little delay after the P wave. That's due to the AV node, delays the signal, of allowing that action potential entering the ventricles. So QRS is ventricular depolarization, as well as repolarization of the atria that happened way out over here. So it's both of those together. You can't really separate them, can't tell them apart. And then lastly, the T wave is ventricular repolarization. Now these are electrical events on the heart. They're not synonymous with contraction. And you have a pretty good picture in your book that shows that. The electrical signal is just a signal for contraction. It's not actual contraction. It's not a physical measurement. Just like if you're at a stoplight and then all of a sudden the light turns green, all right, does that mean that you're already in the intersection? That's just a signal. And then you got to take your foot off the brake, put it on the gas pedal, and then your car can move through the intersection. That happens after the light turns green, hopefully, as long as you're not colorblind. All right, so let's look at this slide right here that shows the nice ECG, and where is the peak of the QRS at? Right here, on this line, this vertical line. So that's the peak of the QRS complex, that's peak depolarization. But this curve right here, this big hump, this represents pressure inside the ventricles. And notice that the ventricles don't start to contract until after this vertical line right here. And then the ventricles don't reach peak contraction until this point right here. So there's actually a fairly big delay between the QRS signal and when the ventricles are fully contracted. All right, so don't forget, ECG is just the electrocardiogram. That's the signal for contraction. Two different kinds of things. Okay, so we talked about regulation of the heart, and we're going to move on to extrinsic regulation of the heart. That means that it's going to require something outside the heart to control the contractility of how the heart is pumping blood. And the most important mechanism for short-term regulation of blood pressure is what we call the baroreceptor reflex. So whenever you hear baro or barometer, guess what we're talking about? What kind of modality of energy? Okay, are we talking about light or vibration or a chemical stimulus? Or have you ever listened to a news report and listened and heard what the barometric reading was? Barometric pressure, right? So anytime you hear barometer, that's measuring pressure. And you have barometers inside your body that are measuring blood pressure all the time. You don't want it to be very high, because what happens if it were to get really, really high? Well, what happens if you fill up a balloon with too much air? What happens to the balloon? It pops. That could happen to blood vessels, right? And then that could be the end of the story for you. So your body has to measure blood pressure all the time. The baroreceptor reflex is the most important mechanism for regulating your blood pressure from second to second, short term, minute to minute, very short term periods. And it is mediated by the autonomic nervous system, which affects cardiac output. And the autonomic nervous system has got two divisions. Can anybody remember what the two divisions of the autonomic nervous system are? It's the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. All right, so parasympathetic and sympathetic. Okay, now let's say what the effect on the heart is. Parasympathetic decreases the heart rate. So that means that the sympathetic is going to do what? Is going to go the opposite way, because they're antagonistic to each other. It's going to increase the heart rate, but it also affects the force of contraction as well. It increases the heart rate and force of contraction. All right, so let's look at a reflex, how it gets started. You have baroreceptors in the aorta and the carotid arteries. We're going to take a look and see where those are a little bit later today. But the aorta, well, you know where the aorta is. That was on the heart diagram. That's the arch of the aorta. That's a major artery coming off the base of the heart, and it looks arched. That's the aorta. And the carotid arteries are in your neck, right about at this level right here, underneath your jawbone, right here and right here. Okay? So let's just say that for some reason there was a decrease in blood pressure. What can measure a decrease in blood pressure in your body? They have baroreceptors, right? And where are those baroreceptors located? In the aorta and the carotid arteries. All right, those are the two places where the baroreceptors are. All right, so they're going to send signals, the blood pressure signal, to the cardioregulatory center. That's in the medulla oblongata. Can anybody kind of point where your medulla oblongata is? Where's your medulla? Yeah, it's way down in your base of the brain. Okay, way back down over here. That's where the cardioregulatory center is. And in the cardioregulatory center, it knows what your blood pressure should be. And what, as a matter of fact, what should your blood pressure be? Yeah, I like that. 120 over 80, that's systolic over diastolic. And if there's a decrease in blood pressure, maybe it went down to 90 over 60 or something. And in the cardioregulatory center, it has this number, 120 over 80. And if it's lower than that, the cardioregulatory center says everything's fine or there's an error in your body. Let's just say your blood pressure went to 90 over 60, which is what? A decrease. So the cardioregulatory center is going to compare it to 120 over 80 and say what? Everything is fine? Your blood pressure is perfect? Or what? Yeah, the cardioregulatory center is going to say, oh, your blood pressure is too low. And it's going to make a decision on to do something. To do what? To boost your blood pressure back up to where it should be. That's what the job of the cardioregulatory center is. So it's going to send out nerve impulses to a couple places. All right? And your heart is regulated by your autonomic nervous system, right? Your autonomic nervous system. And the two divisions are the parasympathetic versus the sympathetic nervous system. If your blood pressure is too low, the cardioregulatory center is not going to send anything through the parasympathetic, because what was the parasympathetic nervous system doing to the heart? Was inhibiting it. Yeah, decreasing the heart rate, inhibiting the heart. And if you inhibit the heart, guess what's going to happen to blood pressure? It's going to go down even further. So if you're low blood pressure and you inhibit the heart, your blood pressure is going to get lower. Means you're going to move farther and farther away from normal, which is not good, because you might just pass out. All right, so the cardioregulatory center increases nerve signals into the sympathetic nervous system, and these are going to go to a couple of places. The sinoatrial node. What's the job of the sinoatrial node? It's got another name. a common name. What's a common name for the sinoatrial node? That's a part of the conduction system. It's called the pacemaker of the heart. That's the pacemaker of the heart. So the sympathetic stimulation of the pacemaker of the heart is going to increase the heart rate. So your heart is going to speed up. Cardioregulatory center also sends sympathetic outflow to the ventricles. And what's the effect of sympathetic stimulation again? Is it inhibitory or stimulatory on the heart? Of sympathetic nerves, it is stimulatory. So on the ventricles, the force of contraction is going to increase. Your heart is going to pound more strongly, more forcefully. And when your heart contracts more, that means that when it does contract, it pumps more blood out. And the amount of blood that's pumped out every time your heart beats, remember, is what we call the stroke volume. So the stroke volume increases. The sympathetic nervous system also goes to the adrenal gland and releases epinephrine. Epinephrine gets released into your circulatory system, goes everywhere in your body, including your heart. That further increases heart rate and stroke volume. So what happens, okay, to cardiac output when stroke volume and heart rate both go up? Remember, cardiac output, CO, is equal to heart rate times stroke volume. So if either one of these goes up, the cardiac output goes up. Okay, and cardiac output is related to pressure. So heart rate, stroke volume increase, the pressure is going to increase. The pressure goes up. So the effect right here is an increase in blood pressure. So this is what we call, so if a decrease in blood pressure is what we call the stimulus, after all of this takes effect, if there's an increase in blood pressure, what do we call this? If decrease is stimulus, this increase is what we call a response. All right, so the response is going to add back to the stimulus, which was what, a decrease. And is this response going to counteract the stimulus or add to the stimulus? Is it going to add to or subtract from the stimulus? Well, the response is an increase in blood pressure. The stimulus was a decrease in blood pressure. We see that these subtract from each other. That brings your blood pressure back to normal because these are counteracting each other. And this kind of, so this is feedback. All right, so this is feedback. And if the response subtracts from the stimulus, there are two kinds of feedback. It can be positive feedback or negative feedback. All right, and if the response subtracts from the stimulus, it's what we call negative feedback. If the response, in this particular case, was to decrease blood pressure, what would happen to, would it add to or subtract from the initial stimulus? It would add to it. So your blood pressure would be what? Going lower and lower and lower and lower, and then you would just pass out. But because this is negative feedback, this response subtracts from the stimulus and your blood pressure goes back to normal, to where you should be, and you don't pass out as a result of that. So negative feedback is the kind of feedback that produces, that allows for homeostasis, that produces just a normal, okay, functioning inside your body. So even though it's a negative, it doesn't have a bad connotation to it. Negative feedback actually has very good connotation because that's what maintains homeostasis in your body. Okay, so baroreceptor reflex, you got to know something about. It's a way that your body does what? Maintains blood pressure in very short notice. Like for instance, right now you're sitting down, and after class, when you stand up, your blood pressure is going to go down, but your baroreceptors are going to monitor that decrease in blood pressure, and as soon as you stand up, I bet you could notice that your heart rate increases. Maybe we could do that experiment. We could take our heart rate before we stand up and measure your heart rate again, and you'll probably notice that it went up right away. That's just so that you don't pass out. Okay, so that's the important mechanism for maintaining your blood pressure. All right, let's turn away from the heart now a little bit and talk about blood vessels. Let me see if there's anything else I want to show. Oh, well, here's some pathways of the baroreceptor reflex. Okay, so here's your heart. Here's the sinoatrial node, right? So here's the conduction system. Here's the aorta. Here's where you have some baroreceptors. And then, remember I said you got to know this is the brachiocephalic, and then common carotid, and then the subclavian artery right here. So this is the artery that's going up to your head. And right here, at this bifurcation, a bifurcation is when an artery splits into two. There's an internal and external carotid. Right here, there are some additional baroreceptors. This is what we call the carotid sinus in the carotid artery. So this can measure blood pressure as well, because you have to maintain blood pressure to your brain. Otherwise, what's going to happen? You're going to pass out. Okay, that's not necessarily always a good thing. All right, so here we see nerves going from the carotid sinus and the aorta to the medulla. This is the cardioregulatory center, and it compares the blood pressure measurement coming in to what we call a set point, which is your normal blood pressure, and then makes a decision on what to do, and it sends that decision out through the sympathetic or parasympathetic nervous system to affect the heart, to change the blood pressure to bring it back to normal. Okay, so we looked at the sympathetic to bring your blood pressure back up as an example of that. So that is the baroreceptor reflex. Okay, now for blood vessels. We're always interested in physiology and anatomy and layers that makes various organs up. And when students start learning about anatomy and physiology, they're kind of bored with layers. But you should always really pay attention to layers, because that's how we diagnose a lot of diseases and stage diseases. All right, so we can diagnose what's wrong with somebody by looking at the number of layers that are affected, and we will be able to stage that pathology. How advanced is the pathology? Is it very early in its development, or is it in a late stage? And depending on the stage, we know a couple things. We know how to treat a disease process, and then the second thing is we also know what the prognosis is going to be, just by knowing what kind of layers are involved. So what does prognosis mean? Yeah, the outcome. That's right. Even if we treat somebody, if the disease process is very advanced, even if we treat somebody perfectly, the outcome still might not be very good, because the disease process is at a very advanced stage. And we can tell stages by looking at these various layers right here. All right, so let's look at some layers that make up a blood vessel. On the outside, so is the tunica externa, and tunica, you don't have that in your notes? Are you sure? What's in your next one? Oh, just some structures. Okay. All right, well, I'm going to tell you about these layers. It won't be on a test, I guess, but I'm going to just show you these layers, and you should look for them if you ever take another class. You got three layers. You got one on the outside, that's the externa. Tunica just means tunic. What's a tunic? Anybody know what a tunic is? It's a coat. All right, so a coat is just something that's surrounding a blood vessel. All right, then the media has some smooth muscle that means that it can contract or relax, change the diameter of a blood vessel. And then the inner layer, the tunica intima, is just a single layer of cells. So we can just look at this real quick. Here are some blood vessels. Here's the tunica externa, mostly connective tissue. Here's the layer that has, you see these red things in here? Those are smooth muscles that can change the diameter of this artery. And then the innermost layer, the tunica intima right here, is just a single layer of very flat cells. So this is what we call an endothelium. It's very, very thin. And then the inside part of the tube of this blood vessel is what we call the lumen. The lumen is just the center part of any kind of tube. So for instance, an airway has a lumen, like the part that of your trachea that is transmitting air, that's the lumen of the trachea. This is the lumen of a blood vessel. All right, so the other thing that's interesting is that we have an artery on the left and a vein on the right. Which one has more muscle tissue, an artery or a vein? The artery has much more muscle than the vein, and that's because the pressure in an artery is much higher than a vein. And so an artery has to have a lot more muscle to hold on to that pressure. The other thing that I notice on the vein over here is that it has these little flaps. Where did we see little flaps like this? Yeah, valves in the heart, for instance, right? So veins have valves that allow blood only to flow, okay, to the heart, but prevent blood from flowing back to your extremities because of these valves. But notice an artery. Does an artery have valves? No, doesn't have any valves whatsoever. Because it's so high pressure, blood never has a tendency to go backwards. Okay. So that's not on your list. This is your list. Okay, pulmonary circulation versus systemic circulation. All right, so remember that there are two circulations in your body. One comes from the right side of the heart and the other from the left side of the heart. I thought you said this wasn't on there. Oh, just the layers right there.
Yeah, the layers weren't, but the types of vessels.
Types of vessels. Yeah, I'd like to. Okay, well, we know a little bit about some of the structure of a blood vessel. Arteries are what? Big and thick, have a lot of musculature. They have the highest pressure because they're receiving blood from the heart. Okay, some small arteries can dilate or can constrict, and that adjusts the amount of flow that can go through a blood vessel very easily. Okay, so let's look at this little table that I have right here. Let's look at the diameter of a blood vessel and then calculate what its flow will be. So if a blood vessel has a diameter of 1, let's just say that the blood flow through it is equal to 1 as well. But if we double the diameter of a blood vessel without knowing anything, well, how do you think that the blood flow should change? If we increase the diameter of a tube, do you think the blood flow should go up or go down as we increase the diameter? It should go up, right? Now, how fast does it go up? Does it go up to the same degree, say 100%, compared to the change in diameter? Well, you know what? It goes up by a factor of 16. So it goes up tremendously. It goes up very, very fast. If we triple the diameter of a blood vessel, the flow goes up by a factor of 81. And that's because, okay, the flow is proportional to the radius to the fourth power rule. Okay, so if we change the radius a little bit, what do you have to do? Multiply that change by itself 4 times. Right, so small changes in radius have a huge impact in the flow through a blood vessel, and that's how your body regulates what tissues get blood and what other tissues don't get blood, by adjusting the diameter or radius of a blood vessel. Just small changes make huge differences. Okay, so some arteries can do that. Arterioles are the most important for regulating blood flow because they vasodilate or vasoconstrict to the highest degree. And an arteriole is just a smaller artery. Yeah. Oh, right here?
Yeah.
This just means that the flow through a blood vessel is related to the radius? Okay, so that if the radius increases, the flow increases. But it's not a one-to-one correspondence because what is R to the fourth power? That is equal to R times R times R times R. So if the radius changes a little bit, you have to multiply that change together 4 times. So it goes up very fast. Or if you decrease the radius, it goes down very fast. So we call that the fourth power rule. Okay, so an arteriole is just a small artery. So arteries are going to bifurcate, split into smaller arteries, and they're going to bifurcate, splitting into smaller ones. Arterioles are the ones that can vasodilate and vasoconstrict the most, thereby controlling blood flow to various parts of your body. And then there's something called a precapillary sphincter. Anybody remember what a sphincter is? I think I mentioned it in passing once way long time ago when we were talking about muscles. It's a circular muscle, and a sphincter is made out of smooth muscle, so it's under autonomic control, and it surrounds the entrance to a capillary. And that sphincter can constrict or can dilate. When it constricts, it cuts off blood supply to a capillary. When it dilates, it allows blood to go through a capillary. So I do have a little picture of one right here. So here is what we call something, this is what we would call an angiogram. So here is a very small artery right here. What's a name for a very small artery? Arteriole. Okay. And then here's a branch coming off an arteriole. And you see these little dots right here, and right here, and right here. These are what we call precapillary sphincters, and these act as little gates that can control the blood through this capillary network. And when it constricts, it turns off blood, and when it dilates, it opens up, and blood can flow through it. That's the job of a precapillary sphincter. Okay. Number four, the capillary. This is the smallest blood vessel, and it is made up of a single layer of squamous epithelial cells. So it only has the endothelium. It doesn't have the tunica externa or media, only the intima, which is the endothelium. And the capillary is very important because this is the site for exchange. This is the only place where things can enter the circulatory system or leave the circulatory system. So here is a picture of a capillary, and notice that it doesn't have any muscle around it. And since it doesn't have any muscle around it, it can't be an artery, can't be a vein, it can only be a capillary. And there are even some spaces between these cells that make up the wall, right, little windows for fluid to actually leave. So nutrients can leave, can actually diffuse across the cell because the cell is real, real thin, and substances can even enter a capillary here, like in your digestive tract. This is how you absorb nutrients. And in your lungs, this is how you absorb oxygen, only through capillaries. Because capillaries, compared to other blood vessels, how would you compare these to other blood vessels? There's a capillary. Here are, thank you, arteries and veins. So arteries and veins are both way too thick to allow things to move in and out of the blood as a result. So only through very, very small capillaries. So moving in and out of a capillary is what we say, what? Exchange. Takes place in capillaries. All right, and venules, after a capillary, all right, capillaries come together. They form very small veins, which is what we call venules. And when arteries join together, we call that anastomose. So when an artery splits, what do we call it when an artery splits? That's a bifurcation. All right, when an artery splits into two smaller arteries, that's a bifurcation. When veins come together, go the opposite way, that's anastomosis, or anastomose when they come together. And then venules are going to anastomose to form veins. And veins are going to carry blood back to the heart. And blood only flows back to the heart because veins contain a little structure. What's that little structure that a vein has that allows blood only to flow back in one direction? Those valves. Yeah. Here's that valve right here. And the valves are made up of endothelium. That's the layer that makes up the capillary. It's the same kind of structure. Okay, so let's talk about some physical chemistry. And remember back to diffusion. How does a molecule diffuse? If there's equal concentration of a chemical in a room, is it going to diffuse one way or another? The answer is no, because you said it can only diffuse from high concentration to low concentration, right? Okay, let's think about how a fluid will move in a tube. A fluid doesn't necessarily move by concentration, it moves by pressure. All right, so which way will a fluid move, from low pressure to high pressure, or from high pressure to low pressure? It's the same principle as diffusion. It's going to be from high pressure to low pressure. All right, so how does blood flow? From the heart, what's a blood vessel that blood flows after the heart? It's an artery, then an arteriole, then a capillary, then a venule, and a vein. So which one of these do you think has the highest pressure? The arteries. Which one has the lowest pressure? It's the veins. Now, when I ask that question a lot, sometimes students will say, oh, a capillary has got the lowest pressure, right? The capillary is very important because that's where exchange takes place, because that's the thinnest blood vessel. But if a capillary had the lowest pressure, blood would flow into a capillary from arteries. That makes sense. But blood would also flow into a capillary from veins, right? So blood would flow from a vein back to a capillary, and then blood would never go back to the heart, and that would be terrible, right? So veins have the lowest pressure, so blood goes from an artery through the capillaries into the veins. And you have a pretty good picture in your book that shows that. All right, so here is a plot of your systemic blood pressure versus distance from the left ventricle. And the first artery is the aorta. And then large arteries, small arteries, arterioles, capillaries, venules, veins, right? And then the artery that the vein that's attached to the heart is called the vena cava. So the vena cava has got to have what? The lowest pressure so that blood will flow back to the heart. And notice that the pressure in the capillaries is what? Not zero at all. It's very close to zero in the vena cava, but not a capillary. Right? So don't ever say capillaries have the lowest pressure, because they don't. If they did, all the blood would flow into them. Okay. So that's it for types of blood vessels and some characteristics of them. All right, let's look at the circulations. Remember, there were two kinds of circulations. There was a systemic and pulmonary circulation. Where does the pulmonary circulation take blood to? To the lungs, right? And what's going to happen in the lungs? What happens in the lungs? Why is blood going to the lungs? To take up oxygen, to put oxygen in the blood, right? Okay. So the right ventricle of the heart pumps blood into the pulmonary trunk, and that's an artery. The pulmonary trunk then bifurcates very quickly into the right and left pulmonary arteries going to the heart. And in the heart, CO2 is released from the blood, oxygen is picked up, and then oxygenated blood is brought back to the heart via the pulmonary veins through the left atrium. So that's the pulmonary circulation. And you have a couple great pictures in your book regarding these circulations. Right here. Okay, so here is the right ventricle, and this is the pulmonary trunk. And since you have two lungs, it's going to bifurcate into the right and left pulmonary artery, and the pulmonary artery is colored blue. Why is that? It's deoxygenated, right? So remember, we always name an artery by the direction of blood flow with relation to the heart, not the chemicals that's being transported. All right, then after the lungs, it comes back to the left atrium right here, and it's red because it's oxygenated coming back from the lungs. And then the left ventricle pumps it into the aorta, feeds the rest of your body oxygenated blood, and it comes back to the right atrium, deoxygenated via the vena cava. And then that process just starts again, because here's the right ventricle that pumps blood to the lungs to pick up oxygen. Okay, so we went over, just went over both the systemic and pulmonary circulation. So what about the systemic circulation? The aorta. Okay, let's look at the aorta. This is the beginning of the systemic circulation. The aorta receives blood from the left ventricle, and we see a little bit of an ascending division of the aorta, and then it arches over, so we call that the aortic arch, and then it descends through the rest of the body. This area right here is what we call the thoracic aorta, right about this level right here. That's where the diaphragm is. Everything above the diaphragm is going to be the mediastinum and the lungs. And this is what we call the abdominal aorta. It's descending through the abdomen. And let me just see what things you got to know about the abdominal. Oh yeah, branches off the aorta. The first one, we went over that already. That's the brachiocephalic. And then the left common carotid and the left subclavian. Okay, so the common carotid, where does the common carotid take blood to? Versus the subclavian. The carotid takes blood to the head, right? Here's the common carotid on the right side, here it is on the left. So these are two main blood vessels that supply our brain. The subclavian takes it to our upper appendage, our arm. So this goes to the left arm, this goes to the right arm. And these are on the arch of the aorta. Okay, so we're talking about some of these branches. So the arch has got the brachiocephalic, the left common carotid, and the left subclavian. And the ascending aorta has some branches too. Where was that ascending aorta at? Right here. Okay, but I don't see any branches coming off. But I do see something right here and right here. These are blood vessels that actually nourish the heart itself. So a blood vessel that nourishes the heart are what we call coronary arteries. This is the right coronary artery. This is the left coronary artery. So those are the first branches off the aorta, and in particular the what? Ascending aorta. Here is an important figure right here. So here's the brachiocephalic. Can you remember where the brachiocephalic was? That's this one right here. So we're looking at somebody's right side. So we're looking from somebody's right shoulder when we look at this head right here. So here's the brachiocephalic. And it bifurcates into the subclavian, which goes to the arm, and the other one that goes to the head, which is the common carotid. And the only other thing that I want you to, well, a couple other things on this slide I want you to appreciate. The common carotid bifurcates or splits into an external that feeds the outside of your head and the internal. And guess where this internal carotid artery goes? What's inside your head? Very important structure. The brain, that's right. So the internal goes and nourishes the brain while the external feeds what? Your scalp and face and muscles and things of that nature. And right in this region right here, that bifurcation, that's the carotid sinus, we just looked at something special that you can find right in this area right here, the carotid sinus. What do we find right in this carotid sinus besides blood? Something for regulating your heart rate and blood pressure. Okay. Yeah, you can actually palpate, you can feel your pulse there. But so can the cardioregulatory center measure blood pressure right there. Because what is right here? You have baroreceptors right here in the carotid sinus. All right, so there are important pressure sensors right here in the carotid sinus. There's only one other blood vessel that takes blood to your brain, and that is the vertebral artery. And look where it goes. Can you see where this vertebral artery goes and why they name it the vertebral? Because it looks like it's going right through holes in the vertebral column. And indeed, that's true. In the transverse processes of these vertebrae right here, there's a foramen that this vertebral artery passes through. So only these two blood vessels on both sides of your body feed your brain, the vertebrals and the internal carotids. Okay. All right, so back to these baroreceptors right here. This is a place where there is a lot of pathology in people. It has a tendency to form plaques and occlude, and this is probably the one region in the body that's imaged more than any other region. Because somebody's going to have a stroke or a transient ischemic attack, they might pass out, and they want to find out what's happening to this area right here to see if it's blocking blood to the brain. And a lot of ultrasound studies are done right here. Also, since there's pressure receptors, if you were to press on those baroreceptors, would that increase the pressure or decrease the pressure if you press on them? If you start to squeeze those, don't do it. Okay, I want to talk about it first before you do it. Okay. Okay, if you press on the baroreceptors, that's going to increase the pressure on them. Right? Just like if you press on your arm, that's going to increase the pressure. So the baroreceptors feel that big increase in pressure. And guess what? Where do baroreceptors send that signal again? To the medulla, the cardioregulatory center. So if you artificially press on the baroreceptors, your medulla is going to think, what about your blood pressure? That is skyrocketing, all right? So it's going to compare a really high blood pressure to what it should be, and what is the cardioregulatory center going to do on the heart then? What's the effect on the heart going to be? It's going to say, hey, your blood pressure is way too high. Decrease heart activity, all right? So your heart rate is going to slow down. The force of contraction is going to decrease. And then what might happen? You might actually faint. You might actually pass out. All right, so if you really press on those baroreceptors, you might actually force yourself into what we call syncope, or fainting. And some people that wear really tight collars, okay, they might have problems with passing out because they're stimulating those baroreceptors. And it's probably the basis of, like, chokeholds and knockout holds, you know, people you can put in arm locks and things like that. You can press on their baroreceptors, and you can actually pass out. Or if somebody's doing surgery in this area and they're not careful, okay, and they stimulate those baroreceptors, you can almost kill somebody by stopping their heart, by artificially stimulating the baroreceptors right here. Okay, so that's why I didn't want you to mess around with those too much. Some people are much more sensitive than others. So you got brachiocephalic, the common carotid, and right where the common carotid bifurcates to internal and external, you got the baroreceptors. So what's the name of that reflex that the baroreceptors participate in? It's for regulating blood pressure, the baroreceptor reflex. Now, is that long-term or short-term?
Short-term.
That's short-term, right? That's like when you change body position so that you don't pass out. Okay. So we talked about all these right here. The upper limbs, let's see if we can find some blood vessels to the upper limbs. Okay, so can you see the brachiocephalic here, then the subclavian, and then that as that artery gets to the axillary region right here, that becomes the axillary artery, and when it gets into the arm, it's called the brachial artery. And then in the forearm, we got a couple. Laterally, can anybody remember what the lateral bone in the forearm is called? The one by the thumb, that's the radius, that's right, and the medial one is the ulna. So that's the radial artery and ulnar artery right there, named after the bone that it courses by. So when you take somebody's pulse, what artery do you monitor somebody's pulse with? Look at the diagram right there. What artery is that? Who could tell? It's the radial artery, yeah, because that you palpate just right above your thumb right there. That's the radial artery that you can feel pounding away right there. That's a nice distal pulse in the radial artery. It's nice and superficial. Okay. So it's easy to know these different arteries. Very, very easy to know. How many arteries do I want you to know in here? Okay. Do you have this one? Okay. All right. So that's the upper appendage. In the abdominal aorta, we can break arteries down depending on whether they're unpaired branches or paired branches. And some organs you only have one of. Like, give me an organ in your abdominal cavity that you only have one of. We haven't really studied that yet, but you probably have a feel for that. How many stomachs do you have? You got one. Okay. How many livers? Only one. Okay. So you only need one artery going to those organs. So you only have an unpaired branch coming off the aorta. But some other organs you have pairs of in your body, in your abdominal or pelvic region. Give me the name of some organs you have two of, bilateral, kidneys, right? Gonads. What's a gonad? It's either an ovary or a testes, right, depending on your gender. And you got two of those, so that forms a paired branch. Okay. So let me see if I can zoom in nicely. I can't. Okay, you'll have to look at this small diagram right here. All right, so here are some paired branches going to the kidneys. We call those the renal arteries. Right here and right here is a paired branch going to, for instance, the testes or ovaries. So we call these gonadal arteries. You have two adrenal glands. There are some suprarenal arteries, which are paired branches. Okay, so those are the three paired branches, and you got to know three unpaired branches. So the diaphragm is right about here. That's the separation between the thoracic cavity and abdominal cavity. The first unpaired branch is what we call the celiac. The next unpaired is what we call the superior mesenteric, and then the third one is the inferior mesenteric. So the celiac supplies blood to the stomach, for instance, and liver. Superior mesenteric to the superior part of the intestinal tract, and the inferior mesenteric supplies blood to what, the lower part of the intestines. So that's how to think of branches coming off the abdominal aorta, either as paired branches or unpaired branches, all depending on how many organs you have in that area. All right, then lastly, we can see that the descending aorta bifurcates into the iliac. So the aorta turns into the common iliac arteries, and then you can see it bifurcating again to an external iliac and an internal iliac. And the external iliac then forms the femoral artery, and then the femoral turns into the popliteal behind the kneecap, femoral and popliteal. So those are the only ones on this diagram that maybe you should know, but I don't know if that's an exam figure necessarily. Okay, so who's confused by looking at, say, the external iliac turning into the femoral? Does that seem strange to you, that the iliac turns into the femoral depending on what part of the body it's in? That shouldn't seem too strange, because what would happen if you got on Lincoln Boulevard and started driving toward Long Beach? What would happen to it? It would change name. What's really the name of that street? As you go in there. It's what? It's Carson Street, right? So things, we change the name of these arteries just depending on what part of the body it's in, corresponding to the region. So that's not too difficult to appreciate. Okay, then as far as veins are concerned, veins pretty much have the same name as the artery. So if you know arteries, you know the names of veins, except for the one in the neck. The vein in the neck is not called the carotid, it's called the jugular. So that's one change. Okay, let me see your hand out one more time. Okay, so that's really not really big. And then the veins that attach to the heart are what we call the vena cava. And we've already seen what the vena cava look like. Okay. All right, so let's look at some questions. Who's got some questions for the cardiovascular system? First one, how many chambers does the heart have?
Four.
You should probably know what they're called. How many valves does the heart have?
Four.
Yeah, four and four, that's easy. Let's see, maybe this will work for me. All right, so that's we're still on question one. Be able to identify the name and chambers, name of the chambers and the valves. So we said there are four chambers, and the superior two are called the atria, and the inferior two are called ventricles for chambers, and then you got to know which is the right and the left. Let's see, what about valves? What do we call the valves between the atria and the ventricles? The tricuspid on what side of the heart? The right side. And what's on the left side? The bicuspid or mitral valve. And those are atrioventricular valves between the atria and ventricles. Okay, and then the valves between a ventricle and an artery. Pulmonary semilunar valve. Yeah, the pulmonary semilunar valve on the right side of the heart, and on the left side is going to be the aortic semilunar valve. So atrioventricular are similar, and the semilunar valves are similar to each other. What is the purpose of an atrioventricular valve? A valve actually does what? Just generally, what does a valve do? Yeah, it keeps blood from flowing backwards, so blood only flows in one direction. So in particular, which way does the atrioventricular valve allow blood to flow, but not allow it to flow the other way? It's supposed to go from atria to ventricle, but not flow from ventricle to atrium. That's the job. The AV valve is to prevent backward flow of blood from a ventricle back up to an atrium. What's the purpose of a semilunar valve? Which way does it allow blood to flow? From a ventricle to where? Ventricle into an artery, like the aorta or pulmonary trunk, and not backwards. Where do you find the ventricular and atrial septa? Septa is plural. It is. It's right where? Right in the center, separating the two chambers, right? The right and left chambers. Right and left atrium and the right and left ventricles. What are the three layers of the heart? And know what they are. Well, it's sort of the same. What are the three layers? From superficial to deep. What's right on the surface of the heart? Epicardium. Okay. How many layers are there? Oh, it says three. Okay, that already helps you. So that's the superficial one. What's the middle layer? Myocardium. What's the deep layer? Endocardium. Right. Okay, so what is systole? Systole is when the heart contracts, and diastole is when the heart relaxes, right? Is it important for the heart to relax? Yeah, why is it important for the heart to relax? I thought the heart's job was to pump blood, that means contract. Why is it important for the heart to relax? Yeah, so it can fill with blood. If it doesn't have time to fill, then it can't pump. So diastole is just as important as systole. What is the systemic circulation? Starting where? Systemic circulation starts with the aorta. Okay. And it goes to all the capillary beds in your body. What's important about a capillary? In one word. Exchange takes place. And then it comes back to the heart via veins to the right atrium. That's systemic. What about pulmonary circulation? Where's it going? To the lungs. So how does it get to the lungs? What chamber pumps blood up to the lungs? That would be the right ventricle, past the pulmonary semilunar valve into the pulmonary trunk, going to the lungs. There's what in the lungs that allows for exchange? Yeah, there's oxygen there. But what part of, what kind of anatomy is in the lungs that allows for exchange? What part of a blood vessel allows for exchange? Capillaries. There's pulmonary capillaries in the lungs that allows oxygen to enter the blood and CO2 to leave. And then the pulmonary veins bring oxygenated blood back to the left atrium so that the left side of the heart can pump into the systemic circulation. Okay. Name the blood vessels which connect the heart for each circulation. Okay. You should do that in your mind. Like, what vessels bring blood back to the right atrium? The right atrium. Probably you would like to maybe draw a figure. It's easier to do it if you draw it. I guess I'll draw it real fast. What do we got here? Got a heart. All right, so what blood vessels are bringing, so what do we got here? This is right atrium, left atrium, RV, LV. Okay, so what do we call these? This is the superior vena cava. And what's this? Inferior vena cava, bringing blood back to the right atrium. The right ventricle pumps blood to the lungs. So this is the pulmonary artery. So this goes to the lungs, comes back from the lungs via the pulmonary veins. And then, of course, don't forget about your atrioventricular valves right here. And then the left ventricle pumps blood into the aorta. So those are the major blood vessels taking blood to and from the heart. Those are the great blood vessels. Be able to trace a blood from the superior or inferior vena cava through both sides of the heart and both circulations while noting the names of the chambers and valves it passes. This is a good one. Okay, so I think we've done a pretty good job so far, starting with what? The superior vena cava goes into the right atrium, but then it has to go through this valve right here. What's this valve? That's a tricuspid. I'll just put TC into the right ventricle. The right ventricle pumps into the pulmonary artery. But what happens here? There's something special here. This is the, yeah. I'm going to put a little S right here. Pulmonary semilunar valve, PSV, pulmonary semilunar valve into the pulmonary artery, goes to the lungs, comes back, pulmonary veins to the left atrium, and then what's this right here? If this is tricuspid, this is the bicuspid. Goes past the bicuspid into the left ventricle. Right, and right here, there's something special again, just like there was right here. This is the aortic semilunar valve. Okay, going into the aorta. So that's how you would kind of draw that diagram out. Know what vessels and chambers contain oxygenated blood and deoxygenated blood. Ooh, okay. So deoxygenated blood goes where? Start with the vena cava, the right atrium, right ventricle, pulmonary artery. All right, but in the lungs, don't forget, what happens? CO2 goes out, O2 goes in. So now what do we got? We've got, hopefully this is red, we got what? Oxygenated blood. Right? So even though it's a vein, it's oxygenated blood. Does it look red to you? Can you tell? All right, so left atrium is oxygenated. Left ventricle is oxygenated, aorta is oxygenated. And then what happens? It goes to your body, your systemic circulation. And what happens? O2 out, CO2 in. What kind of blood vessel allows for this to happen? A capillary, right? Because this is just exchange. That's just exchange. All right, so now what happens? From the body, it goes back to where? Ooh, gets a little messy. It goes back to the right atrium, just like that. So that's the circulation. What's the definition of an artery? What's the definition of an artery? Who knows that? What's a definition of a vein? You got to know the definition of an artery and a vein. An artery takes blood away from the heart. Notice we have red ones and blue ones. It doesn't matter what they're carrying. As long as the direction of the blood is away from the heart, that's an artery. What about a vein? Taking blood to the heart. Notice we got blue ones and red ones. Doesn't matter what chemicals they're carrying. As long as it's carrying blood to the heart, that's going to be a vein. Okay. What vessel has the highest blood pressure? Arteries, and in particular, maybe you would say aorta. Which has the lowest blood pressure? Veins. What's the normal pacemaker of the heart? Pacemaker of the heart. SA node. Where is it located? In the right atrium. It's in the right atrium. Which chambers of the heart contract first? Atria or ventricles? The atria contract first. Help load up the ventricles with blood. All right. What does the P wave of the EKG represent? Atrial depolarization. And what does it signal the heart to do? It signals contraction of the atria. What does the QRS complex of the EKG represent? It's ventricular depolarization. And on top of that, atrial repolarization, both of those. So what does it signal the heart to do? Contraction of the ventricles. So the contraction of the ventricles happens after contraction of the atria. Okay, so be sure you can label that conduction system of the heart. I forget what figure that is. But it's easy. It's only got like 5 parts to it. Where are the following arteries located? Ascending aorta. Oh, that you can just get off that diagram. Number 8. Which divisions of the nervous system innervate the heart? And what is the effect of each of these? What goes to the heart? The parasympathetic and sympathetic, those are the two divisions of the autonomic nervous system. So I would say autonomic nervous system goes to the heart, and it's the parasympathetic and sympathetic. So the what's the effect of parasympathetic stimulation? Stimulate or inhibit the heart? It inhibits the heart. It slows it down. Parasympathetic slows the heart down. So sympathetic does the opposite, is what? It stimulates the heart. Speeds it up, increases the force of contraction. And then number 9, what is the baroreceptor reflex? It regulates your blood pressure. So if it goes too high, it slows your heart down. If your blood pressure is too low, it speeds your heart up. And it does that because there are baroreceptors or pressure receptors. Where are those pressure receptors located at? In the arch and also, yeah, the carotids, right? The carotid sinus. Don't press on the carotid sinus. I don't want anybody to pass out. But we could try. Should we try? Should we, like, pick somebody to see if we can get them to pass out? Pinch their carotid barrel receptors real... No, that might be mean. All right, so that's it for cardiovascular system. All right, so I'm going to say some opening remarks about the lymphatic system. First, what makes up the lymphatic system? Does anybody have any notes? Did I put them online? I hope I did. Good. I'm glad I did. Okay, parts that make up the lymphatic system. You're going to be real tired of hearing this one word. It sounds really funny. Lymph. Lymph is a fluid. And we're going to find out where it comes from in just a little bit. Well, there are cells in the lymphatic system. Those are lymphocytes. And lymphocytes are a kind of white blood cell or leukocyte. All right, and then there are lymph vessels that carry lymph around your body. Then there are lymph nodes that are interspersed within the lymph vessels. And then you have some other organs that make up the lymphatic system, like tonsils are some, the spleen, the thymus gland, and even the appendix. Anybody know where your appendix is? Yeah, lower right abdominal quadrant. Sometimes we call it the vermiform appendix. These are all part of the lymphatic system. And so you might be wondering, well, what's the function of the lymphatic system? Probably one of the most important that kind of stand out in everybody's mind is number 3 on my list. All right, so I'll say that first. It forms the body's self-defense system to fight infections and maybe tumors. But it has some other important functions as well. It maintains fluid balance in your body. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to give you a picture of what the lymphatic system looks like. All right, so here's your heart. Here are some capillaries, and fluid leaks out of the blood vessels, and it's picked up by the lymphatic system, and guess what happens to that fluid? It flows through lymphatic vessels, through lymph nodes, and finds its way back to the circulatory system, right? So that does a really important job of preventing dehydration. It returns fluid to the circulatory system, and that fluid originated from the circulatory system. So that's just another circulatory system in your body. All right, so in terms of, and this is maybe one of the more important functions of the lymphatic system, is that it maintains fluid balance in your body. So on this diagram right here, there are about 30 liters of plasma that pass out of capillaries into your tissue spaces every day. 30 liters. Does that seem like a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah, because a big bottle of Coke is how many liters? It's actually only 2 liters, right? So more than 10 times that flows out of your cardiovascular system every day. So you got to have a mechanism to return this fluid that's leaving. Otherwise, what's going to happen to you? 30 liters, yeah, you're going to turn into a potato chip really fast, right? Probably in just a matter of a half hour or something, maybe minutes, you'll dehydrate. So it's the job of the lymphatic system to return that fluid back to your cardiovascular system. Okay, so 30 liters pass out every day in a capillary, but 27 get reabsorbed into the capillaries, and that leaves 3 liters. That's 1.5 of those big jugs of water, okay, every day, that gets passed via the lymph system back to the circulatory system. So maintaining fluid balance is very, very important. Okay, so in the tissues right here, the lymph vessels are picking up fluid from the blood and returning it to the blood. What happens if you lose a part of your lymph vessel right here? What happens to that part of the body where this lymphatic vessel has been interrupted? That part of the body is going to swell up, right? Because you no longer have these lymph vessels returning blood from that part of the body to the circulatory system. And a lot of times these lymphatic vessels are actually, they pick up cancer cells, and those cancer cells get trapped in this lymph node right here. And when you have cancer, guess what has to happen to those lymph nodes that have cancer in them? They got to be removed, okay? And what's one of the trade-offs with that kind of surgery? What happens to somebody when we remove these lymph vessels and these lymph nodes in certain part of a person's body? What happens to that part of a person's body then? It swells up. Yeah, that's just an unfortunate side effect of that particular surgery. But what's better, to have swelling in that part of the body or to have cancer in that part of the body? Well, I'd much rather have swelling, right? But that's still unfortunate that that happens. Okay. The other thing is that the lymphatic system absorbs fat from the gastrointestinal tract. So when we eat food, we absorb sugars and amino acids. Those get picked up by our circulatory system, but lipids are not absorbed by the circulatory system, probably because they would plug up our circulatory system. They get absorbed by lymphatic vessels in the digestive tract, and those lymphatic vessels are called lacteals in the small intestine. So lacteals are specifically responsible for absorbing lipids in our diet. Okay, and when a lipid enters a lacteal, mixes with lymph, it forms a milky white fluid that we call chyle. Okay, so that's the function of the lymphatic system. So let's talk about some vessels. So here is that diagram again. Which way does lymph flow? It flows from tissues, yeah, back to the heart. That's the way that lymphatic tissue flows. And it really doesn't flow backwards. And how come it can't flow backwards? What does a heart have that doesn't allow blood to flow backwards? It's got valves. What about veins? Veins have, they also have valves that prevent backward flow of blood, and there are valves within lymphatic vessels that stop the backward flow of lymph. And here's a picture of a valve. So blood can flow in this direction, but when it starts to flow backwards, it pushes the valves together and it prevents the retrograde flow of lymph back down into the tissues. Okay, and lymph starts at something we call a capillary, a lymph capillary. So let's look at a lymph capillary. The regular kind of capillary that you're looking at before, right here, has got an input from an arteriole, right, and an exit via a venule right here. But a lymph capillary is just a dead-end vessel. So that tissue fluid gets absorbed directly into this capillary, and then it starts to make its way back to the heart via the lymphatic vessels. So each one of these things here are capillaries, and that's where lymph begins, in a lymph capillary. So don't forget, about 30 liters leave a capillary, 27 get reabsorbed on this end. That leaves 3 liters every day to be returned via the lymphatic vessels in your body. So lymph capillaries join together to form vein-like lymph vessels, and they contain valves to prevent retrograde. What does retrograde flow mean? Backwards, yeah, that's a better term for backward flow. Also, whenever you contract a skeletal muscle, for instance in your arm, what does that do to the pressure inside your arm? That increases it, and that's going to squish lymph, and it's going to force lymph. Which way is it going to go? For instance, if I contract this muscle here and pressurize my forearm, it's going to want to squirt lymph back to my hand and lymph up to my heart. Which way is that lymph going to get squirted? Can it go back to my hand? No, because it has valves in those vessels, so it only gets squirted back to the heart. And when we inhale, okay, as we breathe, as we expand our chest, that helps return lymph to our heart as well. And also, there's smooth muscle in the wall of the lymph vessel that pressurizes the lymph, and again, it can only squirt back to the heart as a result of that, not to an extremity. Okay, the lymphatic duct system is a little strange because there's some asymmetry involved with the lymphatic system. So here we have a whole person, and we see two major ways that lymph gets returned back to the heart, via the thoracic duct or the right lymphatic duct. These are sort of equivalent to each other. The right lymphatic duct drains blood from the right side of the head and the right arm and the right upper quadrant. But lymph from everywhere else in the body enters the thoracic duct, and then that's returned to the circulatory system. So there's kind of a very strange asymmetry in the lymphatic vasculature, right? So you can see the areas drained by either the right lymphatic duct or the thoracic duct. And this big collecting basin right here is just called the cisterna chyli. This is how lymph gets back to the blood vessels. Right? And you can see these little dots along lymphatic vessels as they return lymph back to the heart. These are what we call lymph nodes. And lymph nodes, in order for lymph to get back to the heart, lymph has to go through at least one node, sometimes maybe many of them. All right, so let's see what the job of a lymph node is. Okay, well, I skipped a couple. I'll go back to those in a little bit. A lymph node. They're small, round structures that are found along lymphatic vessels. Lymph has to pass through at least one before emptying into a vein. There's some superficial aggregations of lymph nodes in your body. For instance, in the cervical region, where's the cervical region at? That's your neck, right? So there are some lymph nodes, very superficial, in your neck. Axillary nodes are in your armpit, right? And inguinal nodes, right, are in your inguinal region. These can easily be palpated because when somebody has an infection, here are some axillary nodes right here. If somebody has an infection, those lymph nodes actually swell up and they can get sore and you can palpate them, right? And a physician might actually be poking around on the surface of your body sometimes trying to figure out what the extent of an infection is. If all the lymph nodes in your body are swollen, then we know it's a nice systemic, well, not so nice, it's a systemic infection everywhere. But if it's on one side of the body, then you just have an infection on one side, maybe due to a laceration or a foreign body in an arm or something like that. Okay. And so the function of a node is to filter lymph and also produce lymph cells, which we call lymphocytes. And these lymphocytes help fight infection. Okay, so I think I'm going to have to start with lymph organs next time. But don't forget, we're going to have a quiz. Yeah, I'll finish passing back the quizzes too. From last time.